ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife. News breakdown.
Well, the US House of Representatives has voted for the release of all files relating to convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein.
The yeas are 427, the nays are 1. The bill is passed, and without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid on the table.
Well, it had taken months of dogged resistance to the release of the files by US President Donald Trump, but the House of Representatives has now voted, as we heard there, 427-1. He was a Louisiana member who held out. He held out for his own particular reasons for the release of the files. Now, 2 days ago, President Trump realised he was not able to convince enough Republicans to oppose the release, and I guess rather than lose a vote in the House, he changed tack and urged Republicans to support the move. The motion now goes to the Senate, and if it's passed there, which it has, then it'll go to President Trump for his signature. And, he says he'll sign it, so, yes, the files will be released, although perhaps with considerable parts redacted. Amid questioning by reporters about the release of the files on the visit to the US of Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince, President Trump angrily lashed out at a reporter from the American commercial TV ABC network, who asked why he had not already released files on notorious sex offender Jeffrey Epstein, his former friend.
You're a terrible person and a terrible reporter. As far as the Epstein files is, I have nothing to do with Jeffrey Epstein. I threw him out of my club many years ago because I thought he was a sick pervert. And I guess I turned out to be right. But you know who does have? Bill Clinton, Larry Summers, who ran Harvard, was with him every single night, every single weekend. They lived together. They went to his island many times. I never did.
He then suggested the ABC's broadcast license be revoked. Well, there you go. Now, joining us to discuss these events as well as news from Australian politics today, we're joined by Greg Jericho, columnist with The Guardian and chief economist with the Australia Institute. Greg, good evening to you. Welcome back. Welcome back to News Breakdown.
Good to be with you, Phil.
President Trump not in the best mood there. Chastising a reporter, naming Bill Clinton. What's going on here? Do you suspect, I don't know, I was thinking about this today, thinking maybe he's got tight control of the Justice Department. Has he had a look through the files and thought there isn't anything there, or if there is, I've made sure it's not there for release?
Yeah, look, I think that's the big question because, the files will get released, but what's going to be redacted? Well, we know, you know, obviously with redactions, you don't even sometimes know what's actually been redacted. It's, you know, it's not like they're going to just redact the Trump and you'll see Jeffrey met with Donald, you know. So that's the big concern. And also I think it clearly is something that was worrying him given last week it was hosting people in the Situation Room, which is normally held for actually defense invasions and bombings. He's in there in the very secure room discussing things. Clearly he's worried about it, but I think it's also a case of he probably, and I think somewhat rightly, knows even if it is bad, he seems to be able to skate away with anything, and maybe he's hoping that without an actual photograph or video or anything, then he's going to be fine.
Yeah, maybe he's looked through it and maybe he's had people look through it and say, well, there's no smoking gun here. None of it's very good, but there's no smoking gun. And also, it implicates a lot of other people and there's going to be a lot of attention on them. That may well be the long and short of it. Maybe. I don't know. None of us know.
Yeah, I mean, we've already seen a lot of tried to discount how bad Epstein actually was, and I think there will be a lot of, oh, look, everyone was doing something a bit shady, but there's no proof about anyone, and it's all a bit disgusting, really, when you think about all this attention and the names that are being mentioned, and we're kind of forgetting the victims in all of this. It is pretty gross, but it really has sort of come down to some brute politics as well.
Yeah, that's true. How significant is the fact that he was forced to go along with the release of the files? I mean, he's been castigating people. along the way, but Congress might have made this decision regardless of his wishes. So is his grip on Congress a bit less rigid than we thought?
Yeah, I think I heard someone suggest that, you know, his sort of backflip here was a bit of a, you know, get in front of a mob and call it a parade kind of move, where he clearly was going to lose, and he's not someone who wants to be on the losing side. So he's very adept at flipping and saying, by next week he'll be suggesting that he had always been in favour of it, and why was anyone, you know, suggesting he wasn't? Of course, the only problem with all of that is he doesn't even need Congress to approve this. He could release them all now.
He could.
There's going to be a lot of, I think there's a lot of trying to set the framing beforehand going on now, but it does suggest that there has been some sort of breaking of the wall of the Donald Trump devotion, and that is something that is going to weigh on him, I think, in future.
Yeah. All right. Look, let's get out of the White House. Heavens above. The battle to host next year's COP31 meeting continues. Now, this is a conference of the parties. There's a meeting on in Belém in Brazil at the moment. Adelaide is scheduled to, or was scheduled to, host it next year, but all the parties have to agree, and Turkey's holding out, and they say they want to host it, and so there's a stalemate. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese said today that Australia would not oppose a successful Turkish bid to host the next year's COP31 climate summit. So maybe we are thinking we're not going to get it. He warned a prolonged standoff over hosting rights could undermine unity required to help the Pacific Island nations. Now, we haven't dropped our bid, and it would be expected that Turkey would also not block Australia if we won. But there's no voting process to decide who gets it. So the process does seem to be wearing all involved down, with the Federal Treasurer Jim Chalmers today stating what many are feeling, that, for heaven's sake, make a decision. The matter can't drag on.
We put our foot forward. We've made the case. We've been overwhelmingly supported. There are obvious obstacles. We're trying to find a way through. And my personal point of view is that it would not be good for climate change action, for those of us who want to see climate change action, to let this drag on forever.
No. The Nationals leader, David Littleproud, sees the government declaring that it would not oppose a Turkish victory as, quote, giving up.
This is where the Prime Minister's been shamed into giving up after the realisation that this is going to cost Australian taxpayers $2 billion to have a two-week conference. This was nothing more than a glorified attempt to have some sort of stage created for Anthony Albanese to walk onto the world stage and be able to gratuitously say how good he is, all at the taxpayers' expense. Don't take away the politics of this. Anthony Albanese is backtracking from this as quick as he can, because he knows there's a cost of living crisis that he's out of touch with.
Greg Jericho, can't imagine David Littleproud would be wanting a climate change conference in Australia. But there we are. What's this $2 billion figure? Does seem extraordinary. I mean, it is only a two-week conference. How could it possibly cost this much? The government won't say how much it would cost, because they're saying, well, hang on, we don't know whether we're having it yet. Where did the figure come from anyway?
Yeah, there were reports in the Financial Review that originally it was about $1 billion, and then suggesting, it could be more than that, and even up to $2 billion if we get, I don't know, every world leader coming.
Do you understand how it could possibly cost that much? I mean, Adelaide caravan parks aren't that expensive.
It does seem pretty extraordinary, but I did rather enjoy David Littleproud suggesting that this was all just about politics and Anthony Albanese wanting to strut the world stage. And I wonder if he was saying exactly the same thing when Tony Abbott was hosting the G20 or John Howard was hosting APEC. It's quite extraordinary that both of those two events did have bipartisan support, because it was seen as a good thing for Australia to be the host, which gives you some control over the agenda. But with this one, because, of course, it involves climate change, we're very quickly gone into it become real domestic politics. And you're right, though, it is an extraordinary way it's decided. There's no vote. It has to be done on consensus, but people have got veto powers. It's I think it is wearing.
Do you have any understanding, though? Do you have any understanding of how this thing could possibly cost $1 billion or even $2 billion? I mean, what's the cost apart from airfares and accommodation?
Well, I guess it really comes down to. I mean,
you couldn't spend that much money on accommodation. You couldn't.
No, and I guess the main cost you would think would be for security if they are getting major leaders there. But again, that it does seem extraordinary, and but. To be honest, never having been involved organising these events, it's amazing. But $2 billion does seem to be a nice figure that just has got plucked out and people have decided to. It's a nice round number, and whether or not it's even close to reality. And the problem is we're not going to have to worry about it. Adelaide is not going to be hosting it. That seems pretty clear now.
Oh, you think?
And the government. I saw a report that it seems pretty much dropped, and at best we will co-host it with sort of us, but also the Pacific nations and Turkey, and it does seem very much like it's more moving to it's going to be Turkey.
All right. The CSIRO job cuts, the situation with the government funding of science. As we learned yesterday, Australia's national scientific agency, the CSIRO, has announced that it will cut up to 350 research jobs to deal with what's being presented as an imminent budgetary cliff. The jobs cuts will add to at least more than 800 roles lost since July 2024, a fact pointed out by the CSIRO Chief Finance Officer Tom Munyard in a Senate hearing in October. Now, the Prime Minister, Mr Albanese, has defended the announcement, saying the government was a friend of science when compared to previous coalition government efforts.
The fact is that we support science and we support the CSIRO, and we want to make sure that every single dollar of funding for scientific research is going in the right direction.
A lot of jobs. Greg, former Science Minister Ed Hughes, has spoken out against the cuts. He's saying we need to pry open the jaws of Treasury to boost funding, pointing to what he describes as the driest of the driest minds within the sphere of government, notably Treasury and Finance, failing to see the value of science, counting it as a budget cost. He said, quote, "We found $600 million for a football team in Papua New Guinea. I'm sure we'll be able to find some money for our National Science Agency." Does he have a point?
Yes, I think he very much has a point. And it's quite an extraordinary decision, given Australia is already a pretty low funder of research and development, including sort of scientific research. If you count all research and development, government funding and tax incentives, Australia across the OECD comes about eighth last. We're well below other sort of peer nations that we would sort of compare ourselves to. And also funding for the CSIRO has declined very much over the last 30 years, but I'm not quite sure how Anthony Albanese can say that they are a bit of a supporter of science. Maybe they are less intrusive on ARC grants, but in terms of funding of the CSIRO, it's lower than it was under Tony Abbott and most of the LNP years, very much lower than it was under Kevin Rudd and lower than it was under John Howard. It's been a downward trajectory for a good 30 years now. And my view is this is just precisely the wrong moment, because you look over the Pacific and what Donald Trump is doing to scientific research over there, I would be, were I the government, looking at this as a gigantic opportunity to entice some of the brightest minds to come over to Australia give us all the benefits of your research. And instead, we're very much going the wrong way.
Yeah, all right. Look, some economic news today. The Australian Bureau of Stats figures show workers received an average base pay increase of around 3.4% over the year to September. That's in line with the previous quarter and forecasts. The pay rise has slightly outpaced inflation, which rose 3.2% over the same period. And you've recently written about where the average wage earner might be in terms of purchasing power. Is it a boost to the average wallet or purse or not?
No, after this, we've actually gone down a little bit because we had that increase in inflation in the September quarter, and wages growth is not keeping up with that. It means real wages have gone down. They're kind of back around 2010, 2011 levels, which is pretty extraordinary. And the trajectory, when we look at what the Reserve Bank is suggesting, is for a pretty slow recovery. You know, we're talking well over a decade before we're going to get back to where we kind of were with purchasing power before the pandemic.
Mm. Yep. All right. Look, just before you go, one of your fans called us the other night saying we were talking about energy prices and electricity prices and claims by the coalition that that power prices had gone up 40%, and there were other claims being bandied around. Someone said, ring Greg Jericho. He understands these things. I thought, gee, if he does, he might also understand petrol prices. Now, I'm not going to get you to explain those, but on electricity prices, what is the story here? Have prices gone up 40% under the government or not?
Oh, look, to be honest, the problem with electricity prices at the moment is we've got two things going on. We've got the actual price of electricity, and we've also got the impact of the government's electricity rebates and the state subsidies as well, which are all of varying nature. So it depends on where you are, as depending how much it's gone up. But actually, electricity prices have not, the opposition is talking sort of since 2022 rather than more recent periods. And the suggestion, though, that it is all the fault of the government, or even worse, the fault of renewables, is quite extraordinary, because really what we've seen over those last 3 years is big increases in the world prices for both coal, Australian coal especially, and gas. And those two commodities are the main drivers of Australian household electricity prices, because the national energy market has a very weird way of determining prices, and it's basically determined on the most expensive generation that is the last one chosen. So generally, when there's an amount of electricity that's needed, suppliers will go to solar and wind power generated first, because that's cheapest. And if they need more, then they'll go to coal. And if they need more, they'll go to gas. And coal or gas is the price that is actually set. And we have been caught up, as other countries haven't, by the massive increases in gas prices and certainly coal prices, although they've come down a little bit recently. And that's really the big driver. And unfortunately, we're seeing a lot of the blame being put very much in the wrong place, because renewables remain the cheapest. The problem is they very rarely, or they don't set the price all that often, because the only time they set the price is when they're supplying all of the electricity.
In the middle of the day.
Yeah, and we're not quite at the point where that is a common occurrence, and that's why certainly the government is suggesting renewables will deliver cheaper electricity. Problem is, it does cost a lot to build these things and to set up the wires and all of that. But in the long run, if we're relying on coal and gas, that is always going to be more expensive and also very much subject to world fluctuations. Mm. And if Russia decides to invade Ukraine, then off to the races we go.
Mm. All right, Greg, always good to talk. Thank you.
No worries, Phil. Great to chat.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife. Yeah.